what began as a laid-back night of songs and stories turned into something of an entertainment juggernaut in the last couple of decades as we watched the growth of A Celtic Christmas from its humble origins here in the Rogue Valley to the wider world, where Tomasheen Foley and musical guests take a show on the road and try to recreate something of an Irish Christmas like what it was like in Tomasheen's childhood. Good to have you back on the Jefferson Exchange, Tomasheen Foley.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey. I'm glad to be back here.
Tell us again the origin story. This was really one of those deals where somebody said, you know, you ought to tell those things you've been telling me about, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was a crazy story. My wife then, who is American, I used to tell her these stories, you know, and she kept telling me, people would love to hear these stories. And I think, no, you know, people go to see $200 million movies. They don't go and see a guy on a stage telling a story. She signed me up one night at the Ashland Library for an open mic. And I
with
went,
your knowledge?
Without my knowledge. Because she knew I wouldn't go if I knew. And so I told maybe 10 or 15 minute story. There were all of maybe 20 people there, one of whom happened to be Tish Steinfeld, now Tish McFadden, who had a program on NPR at the time. And asked me to come on with her on that. And so I did, and Tish took an interest, a huge interest in the show, and played a huge part in taking us out into the wider world, because I had never been on a stage before. I knew nothing about show business. I had lived a completely different life. And so without her and several other people, Alison Grant, several people in town played a huge part in getting the show off the ground.
So what was your career up to that point?
What was my career? Mm-hmm. I had probably had 100 jobs uh-huh. of various kinds all over the world, Australia, South Africa, Europe, England, Ireland. I'd done all kinds of things, you know, from labouring jobs to I worked in a bank. I think the bank is still recovering from the period.
It's one of those ones that collapsed, right?
Yeah, right.
It was too small to fail.
I'd done all kinds of things, and I had come to America with a company that I had worked for years in Australia, and we set up office in Wilmington, Delaware. And that was a company that provides services to office buildings, cleaning and maintenance and those kinds of things. So I'd done a million things, and as well as I was always writing and...
But very, very corporate kind of life, it sounds like.
It was a corporate kind of life. You know, as you can imagine, I was well suited to it.
You said it sarcastically, I said. Yeah. So, but very different from the life of your upbringing in Ireland. We're talking 1950s West Ireland?
Yes. I grew up on a small farm in a small little parish called Tumplin Glanton. And I grew up in a place where the communal way of life, amazingly, was largely intact up until I was probably 12 or 14 when television came. But up until then, we had no electricity, we had no running water, we ploughed with horses, we lived, you know, almost a medieval life, you know. But we went to town and went to church in a pony and cart, kind of Amish-like. And, you know, it wasn't until I was 14 or 15 that things began to change.
And because of television?
Because electricity came, mm-hmm. and then television came. And it was really amazing to hear the discussions of people before television came. Because it was a communal way of life, and people were anticipating television, and they'd never seen television. And everyone thought you would be able to see what your neighbours were doing. They thought that's what television was, that you would see into their homes what they were doing. Because
oh.
That was the most interesting thing that they could...
That'd be two-way.
Oh. Yeah. And so people had no idea what it was going to be. And even myself, when I first saw television, and it was a lot of it was American programming, like Gunsmoke and things like that.
Right.
And nobody could make any sense of it because it's something you have to learn to watch a movie. You know, sooner do you start looking at a picture and then it changes. And you look at that and it changes. And it's really hard to connect those unless you're used to it. And of course, nowadays people grew up with it. But I couldn't follow a story for years.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't follow what was going on.
Interesting. And so you ended up in a much older tradition of storytelling yourself.
Exactly.
On stage. Which was never the plan, as you pointed out.
Now people can't make sense of what I'm doing.
You were Celtic before Celtic was cool, though. I mean, as we've watched the growth of all things Celtic in the last 20 years or so, did some of that, you think, start with you?
It was amazing. I met on Cape Cod just last week with our agent, who is in New York, and we've had for 18 years. And he said that as far as he knows, we were the first Celtic Christmas show. He said now there are over 100. Mm-hmm. He said, but as far as he knows, ours was the first one.
Oh, and you get to call yourself a Celtic Christmas.
Yes, right.
Have you trademarked the name?
I've registered it. Mm-hmm. I've registered a Celtic Christmas. Mm-hmm. But you can't register Celtic Christmas because it's too generic. And anyway, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, shows all over the country have imitated what we're doing. I was at a show, we had a night off in Boston, and I was at a show there. And they had the window, they had the whole thing, you know, they had the things that we have.
All your accoutrements on stage.
Yeah, and even some of our lines. Yeah. But what are you going to do? You know, you just... have to live with it.
We're talking to the original Celtic Christmas creator, Tamashine Foley, who lives in the Ashland area and is on the road in the middle of a tour. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange if you haven't visited with Tom before. 800-838-3760 on the phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. The show will be on Friday at 7:30 at the Cascade Theater in Reading. Two shows in Medford on Sunday at the Criterion at 3 and 7:30, two shows a day. But you're not the guy who does the dancing, so your legs are okay. But
I would draw a big crowd if I did, if I danced, I'm sure.
let's talk about the building of the show, because obviously there are other elements besides you telling stories of Ireland in the days just before electricity and television arrived. You have songs and stories, and how far back do those go, and how have you found musicians over the years?
The very first year we did it at the Ashland Community Centre. And I did it mostly by myself. And the next year, I got local musicians and a local dancer. And we kind of just developed from there. The idea came to me of how Christmas was celebrated in Ireland, in the country back then. How the neighbours would gather at each other's houses. They would bring their instruments. They would tell stories. They would dance. And I just kind of... developed the show from there. It was very organic.
I'm amazed at the depth of talent that you have on the team, though, and I could have hit myself in the head cheerfully after you were here last year, because was it Marianne was here as the,
yes,
as the singer? And then I found out later after the interview that she was like, you know, the second place for the Irish Grandmaster Dance Champion or something, too. So mm-hmm. So she wasn't the one dancing that day. She was singing and playing music, but she was obviously quite capable on her feet as well as with her voice and fingers.
Lovely dancer, yeah. And in fact, she was the first Irish person to win the North American Dance Championship.
Wow.
Yeah.
Quite accomplished people. Let's get a taste of what goes on, because here's one of your discs. It's called The Priest and the Acrobat. And this cut is called The Rose in the Heather Green Mountain.
Yeah, that's William Coulter just coming on guitar now.
Is he still your music director?
He is, after 18 years.
And William himself is an Emmy winner. Another Grammy winner,
Grammy,
I'm sorry,
yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been interesting to me, Tamashine Foley, how music that in itself is actually fairly complex. There are some interesting rhythms in there and the ways in which the melodies interweave, but complex music that conveys a simpler time.
Yeah, and a lot of Irish music was intended to be dance music. It wasn't really designed to sit and listen to. It was more music to be danced to. And it's only in the past... probably 30 years with the Chieftains, that the idea, oh, you can sit and listen to this music, you know, it's beautiful music in its own right. It's not just something to dance to.
How do you explain the success of A Celtic Christmas and all the imitators that you just mentioned as well? I mean, there can't be that many Irish people in America, but then obviously it appeals to people beyond people with Irish backgrounds.
Oh, it does, way beyond. I would say the majority of our audience are not of Irish descent at all. They're just people, just Americans, who I think the storytelling plays an important role in it because it gives the music a setting, it gives it roots, it places it in a time and an era. So you're not just hearing the music, you're because the music we're listening to right now just reminds me of a stream flowing down a mountain, you know. That's the kind of setting that I try to give it.
How do you keep the material fresh year after year? This is 18, 19 years now?
18 years, yeah.
and so, I mean, the you can obviously bring in all sorts of different musical choices year by year, but it's not like you can add elements to your past and some of the stories you're telling. So how do you keep the storytelling part of it fresh for yourself in addition to the audience?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, the more you dig into your past, the more you find. You know, it's not like there is a limit to what you find. Like, one of the stories I'll be telling at the Cascade and at the Criterion is a story about when I look back now, of how this one little event changed the communal way of life and gave people a new perspective that they hadn't seen before, of a local woman who started bed and breakfast. And no one, everything up until that had been communal. But this woman did this herself. She didn't involve the community at all. It was completely her thing. And up until then, no tourists ever came to our parish. It was just too remote and too out of the way. And the story evolves of how she involved me to entice tourists into our parish.
And what did it take, I mean, to get people into that corner of Ireland? A car.
That's the story. The main road is about 7 miles from our house, the main road to Killarney. We're about 40 miles from Killarney. And so she devised a way to get people off that main road and divert them into this tiny little road that leads to her house. And she did that by having me go over at nighttime, climb the signpost, and turn the signpost for Killarney over.
I was going to ask, it didn't involve changing signs. It did involve changing signs. Not looked on happily by the Irish Transport Board, I'm thinking.
No, but it sort of, most people ignored it because the road was so tiny that people thought, this can't possibly be the road to Killarney. But some people did, and they ended up at our end of the parish. And it was enough to provide our little business.
It wasn't called the Bates Motel, I hope.
No.
So let's talk about then, for a person like yourself who came from this rustic part of Ireland, you know, Killarney 40 miles away and about 40 years by the sounds of it, maybe
yes.
140.
Mm-hmm.
What, and you mentioned your business career, which you, Australia and South Africa and all over, you know, parts of the world. What was it like to get into becoming this world traveler person from somebody in this fairly provincial part of Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up knowing that I probably wouldn't be staying in Ireland because almost nobody did. Back then, there was just no work especially for rural people. And I grew up thinking I was going to be a priest. That was my family's ambition for me. And prayers were said every night in our family that I would be a priest. And my younger sister, who kind of hero worshipped me, she's told me since that she used to privately pray that she thought, priest is nothing. I want him to be Pope.
And neither of those happened.
Mm-hmm. But it meant that I did get to go to boarding school because that was the road you took when you were going to be a priest.
So that got you out of Tumble on Glanton
exactly.
In the first place.
Mm-hmm. And I got expelled from the boarding school.
I can see why you don't run out of material at Celtic Christmas. There's just so many great Thomasine Foley stories.
And so I think I was 18 when I went to London, and I'd never been away from home before. You know, I'd never been out of our little parish except to go to boarding school, which is very cloistered and very protected. And so London was, you know, it was mind-boggling. It was completely overwhelming to me, and I got seriously derailed there for quite some time.
derailed. Probably a nicer term for something else, I'm thinking. Did you end up back then to recover in Tumple and Glentonne?
No. At that time, amazingly, if you were Irish or from the British Isles, you could go to Australia because they were looking for white, quite openly white migrants. The Australian government paid you away, kept you for 6 months, and while you found your feet. And so when I heard about that, I was all over it, and I went to Australia. I think I was maybe 20 or 21 then.
Okay, a little less of a culture shock in Australia than from where you'd been in Ireland.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I ended up in a small town called Bundaberg in mm-hmm. Queensland.
Mm-hmm. So it's funny, there's this sense of like reaching out and finding new parts of the world and new places to go, and then what you've been doing for the last 20 years is talking about what came before.
That's right. I mean, a lot of it was, you know, it wasn't, I didn't and don't live a planned life. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of it was just whim, mm-hmm. impulse, desperation. and I'm fascinated by, you know, I have a son who's 24 now, and how carefully he and his friends plan out their lives.
Uh-huh.
I had just no concept of a planned life.
It was just like throwing a rock with a rope on it, letting it lead you where it would.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, I didn't even know people planned their lives.
So now, when you're doing something like a Celtic Christmas on the road, you have to obviously have some plans and schedules to stick to. I mean, what's that been like? I mean, I look at the schedule here where you're going to be in, it's not a big deal for the moment, where you're going to be in Reading on Friday and two shows in Medford on Sunday. But then 2 days later, you're in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. You've been to the East Coast, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Is it sometimes hard to be the charming storyteller if you missed a flight or your baggage is later?
It
stuff
is.
Like that.
Yeah. You know, I'm more human than most people, and more given to, you know, extremes of emotion than most people. And it's probably my least favorite part of the whole thing is trying to schedule all those things, trying to plan all those things. And it's the thing I'm sort of least good at, I think.
So you have good planners behind you, I hope.
Yeah, I have a great travel agent in Portland who knows me well and we've been working with for years. And William Coulter is a total road warrior. He's been on the road all his life.
Mm-hmm.
And Edwin Huizinga, who's our fiddle player, another complete road warrior. So I travel with people who are much better than I am, actually, at the whole road thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, people still enjoying the show after nearly two decades now with A Celtic Christmas. Tomasheen Foley, the creator of it, here on the Jefferson Exchange with us. The show's again Friday at 7:30 at the Cascade Theater in Reading, Sunday at 3 and 7:30 at the Criterion Theater in Medford. Tomasheen Foley, always good to see you here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Likewise, Jeffrey. Thank you so much.
Best of luck and enjoy the season.